I'm Vermont Edition co-host Bob Kinzel. Just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. All this week, we're using the data from VPR's Rural Life Survey to talk about some of the issues facing Vermont and Vermonters, and what our more than 800 respondents said about the things that matter to them and the ways they're engaging in the future of their communities. Yesterday, we talked about isolation and loneliness and some of the factors that can contribute to those feelings. Today, we want to focus sort of on the flip side of that, where people say they feel connected to their communities and their local future, and what challenges that connectivity. Are you among the two-thirds of Vermonters who say they feel optimistic about the future of their communities? Why? What keeps you working to better your town or your local community? What motivates that sense of civic pride or virtue? And where do you see challenges to that perspective? And if the future looks bright, why do half of the respondents to our poll say they'd advise an 18-year-old to leave? Now, I wonder if that means leave forever, leave for a little while, or what, but we're going to get into that a little bit later. We're joined today in the studio by Michael Wood Lewis, co-founder and CEO of Front Porch Forum, an online platform that connects neighbors to their local community, and Tom Gilbert, owner of Black Dirt Farm and town moderator for Stannard. He's also a town soccer coach, sits on the board of multiple nonprofits, and is overall just very locally engaged. Tom and Michael, thanks to both of you for being with us today. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
So, I'm curious from your perspective. I think you've both had a look at the poll, but also you have your own thoughts and your own ways of gauging community connectivity and community optimism. And I'm curious if what you see from the poll results, about two-thirds of Vermonters saying, yeah, I'm optimistic about the future of my community, if that resonates for you and from your own experience. Tom, let me start with you.
Well, obviously, percentages are so hard to gauge.
You haven't polled two-thirds of Stannard,
right,
probably.
Yeah. Well, although I informally, I suppose I might have. But I generally feel surrounded by optimism. And I think that doesn't surprise me. If anything, I suppose that sounds a little lower than I would hope in a way. I think we have very real challenges, too. And so I don't think optimism is an expression of that everything as the status quo is perfect. I think it more expresses a sense of capacity to continue to improve it.
Do you think the optimism for the future, when you think about how people feel, does their own idea of their future, is that tied to the future of their community? You can feel optimistic about your own personal future and think that your town is probably not going to make it or thrive, or you can feel the opposite. But how connected are those two things?
Yeah, that's a great clarification. I think, we know that elders extend their life expectancy through connectivity. And I think we can also see it in our children that the more diverse and different adult and child relationships that they have in the community, their whole sense of existential relevance is just broadened. And so I think we are by nature a social species, and we tend to, whether it's through statistics or otherwise, express greater well-being when we're in relationship.
Michael, what do you think?
Well, I thought the survey was fascinating, and I think it points out some interesting trends that we should all tune into and think about. And I'm grateful to VPR, Vermont PBS, for sponsoring it. And I also think it opens up questions. It really begs some additional questions, which is terrific. That's how we learn and move forward. I'm also, in addition to running Front Porch Forum with my colleagues, I am a parent and an active community member. And also my soccer coaching is in my past, but coaching youth baseball still.
We could talk about soccer then in the next segment.
But I generally see optimism and struggle and a mix. Hard to say. I will note that it looks like about 66% of the survey respondents responded. They're very optimistic or somewhat optimistic. And there was a similar question in a survey that Robert Wood Johnson Foundation conducted of Front Porch Forum users a couple years ago, and that number was 85%. So, you know, did something change in those couple of years? Notably, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation survey was done, I believe, just after the 2016 presidential election. I'm trying to think of big events that may have changed people's optimism up or down.
Well, you could also, I mean, to what Tom was saying, you know, people who feel connected and that optimism and good feelings can be tied to the connectivity. If you're polling people who are already at least somewhat interested in being connected through something like Front Porch Forum, maybe that self-selecting group has a higher optimism. And then it's a chicken and egg question. Are those people who are already more connected more likely to be boosters for their community? Right. Or does that kind of conversation that you're having with your neighbors, whether it's online or in person, contribute to a greater sense of optimism?
Sure.
And
absolutely.
You may have thoughts on that.
Well, in that other survey had a base of 13,000 respondents, so it was a big population. What we see is this whole notion of social capital. Is super valid. We all know what financial capital, the money in your bank account, but social capital is the value of your social connections, your networks. And, you know, in this day and age, that appears to be shrinking for most people in most places. And it goes hand in hand with a sense of isolation. And, you know, unfortunately, big tech, social media, seems to be often contributing to that, when in fact, you know, we were kind of sold a bill of goods that it would do the opposite. Vermont's version, and I'll do a little self-promotion here, Front Porch Forum, the idea there is to actually help neighbors connect and build community. 5 or 10 minutes a day, you tune into what's going on in your community, and that leads to in-person conversations around the school pickup, the country store, what have you, about whatever's going on locally.
Tom, I'm curious what motivates you to work so hard on behalf of Stannard, you know, in addition to the work that you're doing for your own well-being, for your own family, you know, for your own sense of who you are. And it seems like your sense of who you are is really tied up as well in contributing to the civic life of your community.
Yeah, I think that's true. I guess I come into the world, and the idea of mutualism is kind of native to me. I genuinely believe that I will do better if you do better as well. And I think that is one of the powers of rural communities, is we have smaller communities. And so there's clearer linkages and more transparency in that relational quality of where we all rise together or we all fall together. And so I think about my kids, and I think about being in a rural place but wanting them to have broad cultural experiences. You know, I'm not a performer, but I am thrilled to be surrounded by such talented performers, and I should go out of my way to support what they're doing so that it remains intact. And so I think it's also you know, these things are contagious. Cultural is a contagious thing. We establish norms. And if volunteerism, for instance, is a norm, and the more people do it, we tend to see in statistics that behavior modeling increases, or that behavior modeling causes an increase in total activity. And I think that, you know, few people want to step onto a ship that's sinking. They want to be on a ship that's rising and under sail. And I guess I kind of don't know what it's worth showing up for if we're not ambitious and optimistic about what we're doing. And what we need to do is so much greater than what we can do individually, you know?
But when you say that, you know, it's contagious, do you see that in your community? I mean, in my small rural community, you see the same names that come up a lot. And sometimes it's even the same family names, people who feel connected to the land, who feel connected through generations, or people who have moved into the town but feel the same way you do. And their names come up again and again, whether it's on the town select board or the library board or the wood bank or, you know, doing the volunteering for all these other things. And it still seems like it's mostly a small circle of people who are doing the lion's share of the work for the community, for the rest of us. And so do you think it's contagious, or do you see some people stepping up who believe like you and the rest of the town being grateful for that, but not necessarily following suit?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the larger frame in which things are getting done. And so I think it's very, you know, I don't operate out of a charity mindset. So to me, it's wonderful that we have emergency food programs, for instance. It's a gap that needs to get filled. But that's not angling towards systemic change. And if you're going to arrive at systemic change, you need more than that one group of volunteers to do that one task. You need people to actually believe in something that's greater than just putting, you know, a temporary fix on something. And so I actually think generally the details often matter less than the larger frame. You know, policies aren't very powerful interventions in society. Reframing the values of the society are the things that matter. And so I think it's possible to work really hard and do a lot of good things without inviting other people in. And I think on the flip side, if we turn around and we make every action an invitation, people want to be invited. You know, people are inherently intelligent. They have something to offer. They feel good when they offer it. And I think that that's the part of, you know, we can't just be, I think volunteerism itself is important, but I think we need to think often of ourselves as catalysts and facilitators in building a culture around that, that says, no, this isn't a small exclusive group of do-gooding people. This is a movement. We're a rising tide together. And I think if you go into, it's not that necessarily small groups that are always doing all the work are exclusive by nature, but it's a different thing to be intentionally inclusive by nature. The language you use, the way you invite people, can you give them a low pitch and ask for something that they would really like to do? And I think we see it all around us. The more we roll out in our community, the more our sense of numbers grow in terms of the names that could go on the signatures of a project. And so I think in the 15 years, 20 years that I've been working in the Hardwick area, our total participation and sense of decentralized leadership is really growing.
We're talking today about civic engagement and more broadly about optimism toward the future and optimism about your local community. About 2/3 of Vermonters in our survey said they feel optimistic about the future of their communities. And we're trying to figure out, what does that mean? And when, what does it mean to feel optimism? And what gives you that optimism? Is it civic engagement? Is it being a part of your community? And if not, maybe for you, you feel otherwise. Maybe there's something else that is making you feel optimistic about the future of your community. I'd love to hear what it is. How do you feel like you fit into this conversation? And where would you like to take us? Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.org. Michael Wood Lewis, you want to chime in?
Yes, thanks, Jane. I'm so encouraged by what Tom just shared. What a terrific sign for your community that that's the culture of inviting in more people into involvement and to leadership. You know, I have a interesting spot, perspective to sit and host front porch forums in every community in the state of Vermont. And we've seen them used in different ways in different places. And one that sticks with me, a place I shall not name, I went to a rollout meeting, and there was a person in the front row. There were 20 people in the room who had a very not happy look on the face during my whole little 5-minute spiel of how it was going to work. And at the end, the person, I finally said, well, you know, it looks like you have a question, you know, how can I help? And the person said, well, this isn't necessary. We do not need a way to communicate in our community. And I said, oh, okay, tell me more about that. Little parenting phrase I've learned. and the person said, well, everybody who, you know, everybody is already in the know. And I said, well, what do you mean by everybody? And I knew there were 1,000 people in this town. He said, well, everybody's here. And I said, well, there are 20 people in the room. And there are 1,000 people in this town. I said, oh, no, they don't. I think she actually said they don't matter. So these are the people who get everything done. And I said, well, I'm sure the town's very grateful. You know, your community members must be very grateful for that. But, you know, we've seen when Front Porch Forum takes hold, that nucleus of 20 people grow. And sometimes if the people have the perspective that Tom shared, it's wonderful and it is growth. And other times it's resistance and trying to hold on to fiefdoms. And then those people eventually get shown the door. But yeah, it's a super interesting challenge of creating a culture that's open and inviting for people to get involved.
Again, today we're talking about how people build community, how we feel engaged, where the values are. Let's go to Nick, who's calling in from St. Albans. Hi, Nick. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
How are you today?
Good. And you?
Thanks. Good. Great. Thanks for taking my call. And just wanted to add, you know, in regards to optimism and community, I don't want to shuffle too much on educators. I agree with the concept that it really takes community, but I think really education is the fundamental catalyst to society-wide optimism. I think it starts with intelligence.
Yeah. So, Nick, if it starts with intelligence, you know, is that, are you seeing something that's happening or not happening in Vermont communities that leads you to think about that?
I think Vermont communities are pretty special in a sense. I think we're guarded from crime and drastic socioeconomic differences. So I think we're pretty well sheltered here if you look at the data. But once you start to really get outside of New England, I think there's a lot of disparities. And, you know, we can keep our eye on the ball here locally, or we can think bigger. And it really, it's for whatever, whomever is considering what to consider. I think we're pretty fortunate in Vermont. But I think fundamentally, education is really smart education. We're 36 internationally. China leads the way in education, and they're not spending as much money as us, and there's a lot of problems that might be reconsidered to turn into assets.
Yeah, Nick, I hear you. Thank you for that. And Nick also mentioned safety from the survey. We did ask people if they feel safe from crime in their communities. About 90% say their community is very safe or somewhat safe, and only 4% say their community is not at all safe. So Vermonters, by and large, do feel safe in their communities. Vermonters as well, by and large, feel like the quality of life in their community is excellent or good. Nearly 80% said that. And yet people are inclined to tell young Vermonters to leave the state. And we're going to get into that a little bit as we continue. But let's go to Rob, who's with us from Lincoln. Rob, hi, what are you thinking about?
Hi, Jane. Thank you for taking my call. Actually, to sort of piggyback off of the previous caller in regards to education, I believe that education should start in our small local communities at our local community elementary schools. And in the survey, there's a question that sort of asked respondents what was more important to them, if it was keeping property taxes low or keeping your public schools in your community. And I was actually really surprised and now optimistic because 43% of the respondents said public schools. They favored their public schools and their community over keeping their taxes as low as possible. And then to piggyback off that, only a quarter of the people that did respond actually had children under the age of 18. So children that would be actually in school. And so, you know, the conversation in the general store seems to be that taxes are too high and we have to figure out a way to cut costs in our school districts. And the way that that sort of presented is closing schools. And I think that's actually, you know, we have data, we have support. And so I hope the school administrators in the Mount Abe School District, Addison Northwest, Addison Central, sort of look at this data and take it to heart that folks that might not have kids in the school do support it, even though that might not be the energy on the ground. So, thank you.
Rob, I appreciate you sharing that perspective, and we're going to hear a little bit more about schools when we come back. And you know, it is interesting to think about those questions of only about 26% of Vermonters have school-aged children, and that jives with the respondents. And yet, you know, this question of is it important to have more childcare in your community? Is it important to value the schools? Or, you know, equally important to have property taxes lowered and vibrant public schools? You're right. It's a striking number, and striking to think about what that might mean. It's interesting to think about that word community and whether that word community means your town, your larger town area. You mentioned your school district, which is the same as mine. That's the five-town district. So what does it mean? What is your community? And how do we get at what community means and what it feels like in Vermont? Now, one area we hear about a lot in the local news is the struggle of shrinking enrollment in our small community schools. And we just heard that from our previous two callers as well. So when this occurs in your community, how do you stay optimistic about the future of your schools? And how do you think about that question of the value of a school in your town or in your larger community? For one take on this issue, we spoke with John Castle, the superintendent of North Country Supervisory Union. That's a school district made up of 9 rural elementary schools, 1 middle school, and a high school in the Northeast Kingdom. And this district spans more than 550 square miles, has just about 2,600 students, and it's seen 2 elementary school closings in recent years. But John Castle says he is optimistic for his district's future.
I think rural schools, like many of our rural communities, are incredibly resilient. And I think, you know, there will be ebbs and flows and changes, and schools are dynamic places. And as, you know, populations grow, people adjust and schools adjust, you know, in terms of infrastructure and resources to meet those needs. And likewise, they adjust when the population shrinks. And, you know, I see the high school as a good example of we have reduced faculty in recent years to adjust to a decline in enrollment. At the same time, we've expanded programs. And so it shouldn't all be looked at as a challenge. In some ways, it can be an opportunity as you repurpose space and look at space differently, or you, again, foster these relationships with people in the community and make more community-based learning available. I'm incredibly optimistic with the school's connection to community and the sense of community within a school. But I think there are so many more opportunities for students today, both with community-based learning, but also things like distance learning that we can take advantage of. So I'm optimistic that our rural schools and rural communities will weather some challenges that certainly exist. You know, declining population as a whole and declining enrollment is putting some pressure on our schools. But I think ultimately, I think there's really an opportunity, and there should be an aspirational view that people look to each other. They don't necessarily look external.
So when we think about whether or not it looks external, you know, when it comes to the survival of these schools, John Castle thinks the best solutions can be found locally.
We are public schools, and that obviously we are publicly funded, and, you know, we are, from a governance standpoint, you know, we have school boards, and so they exist as public schools. But the other thing that people should think about as public schools is that we are creating the public. If we don't give students the opportunity to have agency and to have opportunities to be engaged in contributing to their school and their community, we're not fostering a sense of social capital. So I think, you know, community schools are the place to, you know, foster and to grow social capital and to keep that alive.
So how do you find ways to engage with your neighbors and strengthen your local communities? Public schools are one way, but there are others. And as John Castle points out, community schools may be the place to keep that social capital alive, but it also has to go beyond the school, spread out from there as well. We're talking today with Michael Wood Lewis, co-founder and CEO of Front Porch Forum, a sort of digital community notice board, and Tom Gilbert, owner of Black Dirt Farm and also town moderator for Stannard. He's also on the board of a number of organizations in the local community. And let's go to Matt, who's calling in from Corinth. Hi, Matt. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane. My comment was I just wanted to talk about how I feel that the local food movement that really has grown in the past 2 years in Vermont is a way of bringing people together. That may be CSAs, farmers markets. For example, in my town in Corinth, there's a farm called Cross Molina Farm who started with the CSA and then has since moved to pizza nights in the summertime. So every Saturday, it's a place for people to gather to have pizza and listen to music. And it's a real nice way to connect with people, especially with our short summer months. It's really nice to connect with your neighbors in that way over food.
Yeah, Matt, I thank you for your call. And for people, Matt's line was a little bit loud, but this idea of food, local production, but then also local events and community sort of surrounding local food production has been really important to him and something that he sees a value as connecting people and bringing them together. Let's go to Steve, who's on the line with us from Rutland. Steve, hi. Go right ahead.
Hi, Jane. Thanks. You know, one of the things that makes me optimistic is that we're starting to look at things very differently here in Rutland. The long song and dance in history has been that, you know, Vermont's really expensive to live. And, you know, if you're going to live here, you're going to live in Burlington or Woodstock or something. What we've been able to do with the regional marketing initiative down this way is really find some great data that shows why we can compete. And we have world-class skiing right in our backyard here. We have amazing mountain biking, great food, lakes and rivers. And we also have among the lowest property values or costs of any place that has world-class skiing in the United States, a fraction of it. Someone earning 85% of the median income can afford the median price home in Rutland County, and that house will be literally a fourth to an eighth of the cost of housing in many places out west where there's world-class skiing. And we're already recruited over 45 people who have moved here recently through the regional initiative, and we've got hundreds and hundreds of leads and new families that are considering a move as well.
Well, Steve, thanks for your call. Steve, feeling bullish on Rutland and, you know, some of the things that he sees that Rutland has going for it and could attract new people and attract new families. And certainly that feeling of optimism, I imagine, would go a long way. You know, a low cost of housing could be seen in a number of different ways. And if you're framing it as something that's a really good, positive thing for bringing more people in, you know, that goes a long way, I think, into getting people excited about where they live rather than feeling bad about where they live. And I imagine that's an important piece. Before we come back to our guests, let's get one more call in here from Michael, who's calling in from Waterbury. Michael, how are you thinking about optimism and community and civic engagement?
I'm very optimistic about our community. I live in Waterbury and part of the Harwood Unified Union School District, and we're looking at ways to save costs now and cost consolidation. And I think of it as an opportunity to become a larger community, to have our six towns be one community. I know it's hard when schools close, but Waterbury and Duxbury did before. We consolidate our schools, and we're now one community. And I'm really optimistic that we can come together and look beyond our traditional town boundaries to be one larger community.
Michael, thanks. That's an interesting perspective, you know, this idea of your community and what that means. And is it your town? Is it your village? Is it your school district? Or is it something greater or smaller than any of those things? Tom, I'm curious how you see that idea. I mean, you mentioned the sort of greater Hardwick community. You're also, you know, talking about Standard. How do you see this question of community? It's not well defined in our poll. And I think that can make a big difference in what we mean when we say community.
Right. Yeah, I think it would be hard to put a hard, fast definition around it. I think there are boundaries on that based on our ability to have relationship over geography, for instance. So for us, I have been deeply involved with the Center for an Agricultural Economy for years. We have a 7 to 8 town area that we focus on. And while we, you know, have thought there's many ways to plug in and try to intervene in something like the food system, those 7 or 8 towns really represent sort of the watershed of our social capital, to go back to earlier in the program. And so that's where we've focused. And I'd say that defines my more immediate community.
We got a note from Don in Hanover, New Hampshire, who is thinking about that question of community and community engagement in a larger community like Hanover. And Don writes, it's like a series of concentric circles, select board and firefighters and others in the center, then rings of varying degrees of engagement and volunteer work. At the outer ring might be the frail elderly and the disenfranchised. That ring is to be cherished and always kept in mind. So, you know, that's sort of how Don thinks about engagement, community engagement, and ways to think about about the whole community, even if there are some that are doing a greater share of the sort of active work. You know, one of the things that came up in this poll was this question of that I think is interesting. The question is, would you advise an 18-year-old to stay in Vermont or leave Vermont? And Michael Wood Lewis, I've been engaging with some people on Twitter about this over the last 24 hours, lots of people thinking about this question. And I think about it in a couple different ways as well. But I'm curious what your perspective is on that question and the fact that about half of the respondents said they would advise an 18-year-old to leave the state.
Well, you know, I'm raising with my wife three teenagers right now, so it's a very relevant question. You know, there are many opportunities for work and school for an 18-year-old within Vermont. And, of course, there's literally a whole world of options outside and beyond the state. A lot of the parents I talk to kind of have a feeling of, it'd be great for my kid to go out and see a bit of the world when they're in that 18 to early 20s age range, and then, you know, maybe come home, come home to, you know, have that middle part of life, come home perhaps to raise a family. So I think this question in the survey is an interesting one, but it's definitely one of those that would merit follow-up.
Yeah, I mean, for me, in some ways I think about, is there any place that I can imagine living or places that I have lived in the past where I could imagine saying to an 18-year-old, you should definitely stay here? And I've lived in very large urban environments. I've lived in other countries. And I have small children, but, you know, I'm raising children here. But I don't know that it's specific to here, my answer to that question. I think, you know, no matter where you're living and how much diversity there is in your community, it's going to be different in another state, another country, another town.
It's also a class question, of course.
Right.
If you have the privilege to think about, oh, where am I going to go to college, versus, you know, different socioeconomic class where you have long generational roots, and to leave means you're forced out economically, you know, so different people are going to see this question quite differently.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that, let's go to Mariah, who's calling in from Montpelier. Mariah, hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. Hi there, Jane and folks. Thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. I just figured I would offer kind of, you know, piggybacking off of that recent part of the conversation there. As far as young professionals who are from Vermont and you know, having returned a few times now, I actually work in the community development realm, and it's just been extremely exciting. And I will absolutely say, relationships are so key, and relationships are everything. And really, that is what brought me home, is the relationship to not only this place, but the people and the community values that we have here. And then beyond that, just the relationships made with various mentors in my time, you know, going to UVM, as well as in my own personal communities, who really were so critical in helping me find my path to this career realm. And then kind of beyond that, even in this realm, it has been so eye-opening and has built so much optimism in me to see the so many different organizations and programs working to address, you know, a lot of the really significant and complex challenges that have been brought up in this survey, as well as in various media sources around the state. And so that has been really eye-opening, and just another part of kind of my work in my life here that is feeling really optimistic at this time, is really we are at this very unique moment in Vermont, where there's going to be a lot of transition in all of our sectors, based on folks retiring or moving on to other things. And I think as a young professional, it is just such a wonderfully exciting time to be here and to bring that fresh insight. And I really don't feel that, you know, I think folks should go away and experience new things, but be able to realize that these opportunities do exist back home.
Well, Mariah, that brings up a really interesting point, and I appreciate your perspective here and you sharing it with us as a young person and as a young person who left and came back. And Tom, maybe this is a good way to end the segment for today, although these are thoughts that we're going to keep ruminating on, is, you know, I wonder if the question would have been different if it had been asked, would you advise any 18-year-old that this is a good place to make a life as a young person? And so, you know, maybe what the question should be as we think about how to do this in our communities is not, should our 18-year-olds leave or stay or come back, but are we fostering a place where people feel like they have choices and where one of those choices is to make a good life here in Vermont, no matter what your income level or class status? And I don't know how we do that, but maybe that's how we should be thinking about this.
Yeah, that's a great way to reframe it. I would say, obviously we want to transcend income level and class. And I think Michael made a very good point that part of how we do this and make it a good place for young people is do the work, the social justice work, to correct some of the ongoing challenges we have around access. And so until we take care of people's needs, they won't be able to participate in certain things.
Yeah, and that's a good way maybe just to leave it for now, that sort of thought hanging there as we all work on this in our communities and in our families. Tom Gilbert is the owner of Black Dirt Farm, and he's town moderator for Stannard. Tom, thank you very much for being a part of this show.
Yeah, thanks for covering it.
Michael Wood Lewis is co-founder and CEO of Front Porch Forum, a digital community notice board, a way to connect neighbors to one another. Michael, thank you for being part of this show as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jane.